Hello and welcome to the Innkeep Podcast with James and Guest.
I am the guest and I am Rowan Keyboardist. My name is Rowan and my artist name is also Rowan.
Nice! Now that that's clear, we're going to be talking about camera work, video games, and gear acquisition to the point that it might become an addiction. Just kidding. It's just fear of missing out. FOMO, if you will. So that's what we're going to be talking about.
Let's get into it.
Rowan, thanks for being open to talking with me. I think you're the first like just pure keyboard player. A lot of people have played keys to some degree or, you know, might have experience with that as singers. But I mean, you are a shredder, you know, and I just asked you before we started which keyboard you use. And I feel sorry for the brand because they better be tough. You hit a lot of notes, you know. So, I mean, like I said, we had our three topics, but before we even get into that, I instantly think that Roland is like the new, was like, oh, that's the one you wanted to use. But I mean, do you feel that way? Or is it's kind of, what was the brand you said you use? And you feel it's pretty close?
I use Novation quite a lot these days. And yeah, like for a while I used Roland for the last couple of years, but I got, this company reached out to me, Novation, and, like, this synth that they were interested in me checking out was really basically a powerhouse. So I was like, I have to try it. And it ended up being like the workhorse at the moment. So, it's what I have here in Sweden. It's what I have back in Australia. And I've been using it for the last like 6 months and it's been great.
It was one of my first bands ever. We started, and we needed a keyboard player. So we went and got the first keyboard and this one guy said, oh, this one's great. I don't even remember the brand. But we found out pretty quickly it did not make any sound because it was a synthesizer. It was not, you know, one of your plug and play. Oh, there's speakers built in. So is that what you use? Is that the standard for like electric recording artists like yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially like something without speakers. Like it's pretty uncommon nowadays to have that built into a synth. Always has been, but especially now with like all kinds of other keyboards, it's like, most professional gear doesn't have speakers. You have to plug in headphones. You have to plug it into your audio interface. And yeah.
So what about latency? I would think as a guitar player, like, oh, well, at least with the strings, like I can feel it. I can kind of hear it. And then I'm trying to get a sound that doesn't have that latency. If I'm going to record, I still want that speaker to be right now kind of sound. And I always thought like, oh, they have the speakers built in, so there's no latency, but I'm not a keyboard player. So do you ever have any issues with that? Or is it generally like a driver issue? Or how do you make sure you could practice with like as little latency as possible?
Yeah, I mean, the latency problem usually arises with like MIDI and stuff. So when you start connecting shit to your computer, and you know, whether it's your computer that isn't, you know, like fast enough, or if it's just like an issue with like the buffer or whatever it is on your computer using virtual instruments, then you're going to get latency issues. But with just a synth with everything built in, it's basically like a computer. So like everything inside it, it's got a CPU, at least a digital synth does. And it's got RAM to save all these sounds and stuff and samples and things. So in that sense, it's all really immediate because you're basically playing like a keyboard with a computer, right? But with when you've got like a MIDI keyboard or something going into a laptop, then you're gonna start getting a little bit of latency and something that's like noticeable to the point of like, you know, okay, this is affecting my playing a little bit.
Yeah. So that thing that you're using now does not make sound unless you either plug it in via MIDI or a USB, I imagine C at this point.
Well, I mean, it makes sound just like it's got line out, just like a guitar, you know, like,
oh, I didn't know that.
Got a mono. Yeah. 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 So you can plug it into, you could plug it into a guitar amp. It's probably going to be like not ideal for it. It's going to sound like shit. But like whenever I record the sound off the synth through like the audio output into my interface. So it's basically like recording a guitar, but since it doesn't have any speakers built in, you can't just like take it anywhere and then just like expect to hear it. You have to have some kind of speaker or, you know, like I said, headphones or interface, something.
So the direct monitors probably comes in handy for you then.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
That makes more sense. So, I had to know this just how it works, because not only are you just plugging in and playing and you've got to plug into something, but you're not just playing in your bedroom, man. You're going to the beautiful scenery in the background. You're doing the camera angles. You know, you're up there with car commercials. So I need to ask you about that first, because that was one of the first things I saw about your content. I was like, man, this guy's pretty serious about making sure his visual style matches what kind of music he's putting out there. That hi-fi, very sharp, to the point editing and like color is matching. It's tight. It's very, very nice. Very impressive. And I'm wondering, how did you get started on that? Is that a green screen? Is that what made you do that?
First of all, thanks so much for appreciating that. That's something that I take a lot of pride in, like the video and editing and color grading and all that stuff. I've been working hard on it for a few years now. But yeah, how I started was, I wanted to level up my video stuff basically on social media, and I'd been filming with my phone like everyone does, and you know, there's nothing wrong with that at all, but you know, you have to take the plunge and, you know, up your game at some point, visually as well as you know, the audio. So I ended up getting a mirrorless camera like 5 years ago, and it was a Fujifilm, which is like you know, like everyone kind of boasts about their color science and stuff. So yeah, I thought it would be a good one to start off with, you know, like learn how to color grade and stuff, and got right into it. And that's kind of how it began, like the passion for trying to make my videos look good, trying to make the colors look good, trying to try out cool angles. And that led me to do photography and stuff as well. So like now the visual aspect is really important to me, to the fact that like I was telling my girlfriend that like if I wasn't a musician, I'd probably want to go down like the visual route to do like photography or videography or something like that. So yeah, just ended up being really big.
That's amazing. And I think that's incredibly useful for anybody nowadays, especially since, you know, post Michael Jackson, which is obviously forever now, but it's all in music, it has to also have a visual complement to it.
Absolutely. Yep.
So are you shooting raw and then adding like, what is that, a Lutz filter, or I can't think of it right now.
Yeah. So I film in the log format. So like, you know, a lot of cameras are going to have different log formats. Fujifilm uses F-Log, and you can use LUTs. I have used LUTs before. It's sometimes something that I, you know, try not to do, just to have a little bit more of my own creative flair to it. Just trying to build up a look from scratch. But yeah, LUTs are really awesome just for like getting really quick results. Like if I'm making an Instagram video where I just want to make it look really nice, really quick, and you know, I don't really give a shit about like not looking super unique necessarily, then I can just use a LUT. But if it's like a music video or something that I want to have a little bit more like uniqueness to, then I might build something from scratch and see where it kind of goes, what looks best for the scene.
So is it BS to shoot on the iPhone raw, or does that even count the same as obviously it's not color accurate, but does it give you those same options so that you can use those logs? Because if there's a musician listening and they're like, who is this guy? And they look you up, it's like, oh my gosh, I wish I could get that kind of, you know, color and that kind of thing. So, but they only have their iPhone. Are they limited, or is it possible? Like iPhone Pro.
I think it's definitely possible. Like, it's come so far. I think your phone is fantastic. When I mentioned, you know, I was shooting on my phone, like, that's like a crap, like, at first it was like a crap Chinese phone that I had, you know, when I was 16. So it wasn't anything with a raw recording or ProRes or whatever you get in like the best iPhones these days. So yeah, if it's something like that, then you will definitely benefit from having a legit camera or like, you know, a nicer phone. But if you already have an iPhone, like, you can do so much with it. You can color grade and you can do so much where it's like indistinguishable on a phone. Like, you won't be able to tell if it's a camera or if it's an iPhone in a lot of cases on Instagram. It's different if you, you know, again, like I said, filming music videos and stuff where you really are, you know, trying to have as much, for example, dynamic range in low light, or if you're trying to basically have the cleanest footage possible, which you can manipulate however you want in post. In that case, yeah, mirrorless will be much better than iPhone. But for 99% of Instagram musicians or, you know, social media influencers, it's like perfect. You can get so far with color grading on an iPhone and everything. So
what is the easy way? Could you just shoot in RAW and then throw, like, maybe do you use DaVinci, or which one would you say is
absolutely. Yep, DaVinci Resolve. It's I think it's the best one for color grading. I've used Premiere Pro. I think that's the Apple one. Did not like it anywhere near as much for color grading specifically. And that's like a pretty big part of what I do. Like, I don't care about as much flashy edits and cool.
It seems like, cheap. You know, it seems glitches. Cheap to do a bunch of that stuff sometimes.
Yeah. It can sometimes for sure. So I like slightly more like a cleaner image, which just like is just pleasing to look at basically.
I agree.
Yeah, easiest way for me is usually just film log, because you know, if I mess up the footage in at the time when I film it, then I can recover a lot of it. Like, you know, if it's too dark when I filmed it or something, then I can pull up the shadows so much compared to just like having the the factory LUT baked into the camera when I shoot. So yeah, basically very important for me. I always shoot my videos log and then slap on a LUT sometimes if it's just a quick Instagram video or something. Otherwise, build something.
By the way, it looked like there were two options in there. Is that like, just go with one that you like, or which one do you feel like is like, okay, that's guaranteed in DaVinci, where it's like, just use that one. You know, like, imagine that there's a kid watching you and saying like, dude, that guy's mm-hmm. got crazy work, but I mean, like, mm-hmm. I don't know how to do the sliders. I don't know which one's going to be. It's like, is there a certain level where you're like, hey man, you're going to have to look at the shadows. You're going to have a reference photo to like A, B, and kind of get it close to the look that you're kind of going for. Is it like, hey man, if you shoot in log, put in that Apple Pro Res, you know, one and you're set. Or how does it work in your opinion? Where if you had a protege, you know, you're a cut above, I would say, when these looks and you care. Where anyone like me, guitar player, they're just like, just get it done. Give it to an editor, and the editor's like, oh great, more footage that comes from the generic iPhone, and it's adjusting as you're shooting, you know. Yeah, so
yeah,
what would be the easy mode?
So all right, if you're filming videos, this is like what you got to have in check. One, your scene's got to look good. You got to have a nice light. It's got to be kind of opposite where you're shooting from. All right, that gives you a lot more depth in the scene. So if it's coming at you, you're going to get a lot of flat light. It's not going to look that cinematic. Whereas if it's coming from the opposite, if the camera is facing you, then you want the light behind you, like facing the camera, kind of. Or you want it at like a 90 degree angle from the camera. So scene is very important. Lighting is very important before you even get to color grading. With color grading, you want to make sure you can drag in a LUT, but you want to make sure that your blacks aren't super crushed, that you have, you know, some kind of detail, so it looks clean, and also you don't want to blow out your highlights. So with that, some LUTs are obviously designed for certain situations, so you will have to slightly adjust like the highlights and the exposure a little bit to get it right. Just slapping on a LUT usually won't be like completely perfect right from the get-go, but yeah, just like messing around with the exposure, the gain, as it's called in DaVinci,
and
you'll be pretty solid, I reckon, just with that, just with those like two or three steps.
And it's just kind of personal preference, or which one would you suggest as a starter for the LUTs?
For the LUT? Yeah.
So, and I keep saying it different. What are the three letters for that? LUT.
Yeah, LUT. Yeah. Okay. Absolutely. So. Yeah, with the LUTs, I used the Kodak 2383 D55 a shit ton. Not that will make any sense to most of listeners, but the reason why I use that is because it's like I'm pretty sure it's like a film stock, which a lot of Hollywood movies use, and it's very warm.
Yeah.
Looks good just like as a base, but it's very easy to build upon that. It's like a really good thing to start off on, and so I use that quite a bit, and then I basically turned down its opacity so that it's basically like not super in your face, because it's a very punchy look, so when you apply that, it's going to look baked as hell. So you got to bring that down, and then you got to go from there. So that's usually what I use for most of my videos. But if I'm going for a more colder vibe, then I might go for a D65, which is a colder LUT than the D55.
Same thing, bring down that slider a little bit, 50%,
exactly.
Something.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I usually keep the output of that LUT to be like 65%, just so that, you know, it's not overbaked. It's not looking like
how do people give you money directly? How do people promote you directly? And how much would they have to give for you to do a video where you're just like, hey, do you see my cool beside the water outside scene? This is how I did it. How much got to pay for that?
Honestly, I would do it for free. I just don't have it on my agenda at the moment. But
so $1,000, $1,000. Got it. We got the price.
Yeah, that
easy,
sounds good to me.
Easy G. Now, but something that might take $1,000 to cover these days is video game music, because it's such a like. There's no upside to doing it 9 times out of 10. You know, it's like you might get a few people viewing and just a few nice comments. At least with making your own original music, it's something that somebody can get excited about. But I've always loved video game music, and a lot of that is associated with amazing keyboard players. And whether that's actually played or if it's something that's programmed perfectly, that's neither here nor there for me. It's just some stuff that I've heard is above and beyond in a way that I'm just like, that makes me want to play. Because it's either 8 bits and they just find a way to make that work, or it's something where there's just so many instruments coming in and out. I just can't believe it. And I'm really curious if that's had any effect in your playing, if there's any, you know, because, I mean, video games coming up had so many keyboard things, or if is it purely because I heard you play some piano too. Like, it's just sound, wow, that's great. Okay, maybe he's just a piano guy. Where were you influenced the most, and were video games anywhere in that situation?
Absolutely. So I probably started playing video games when I was 5. I think that's when my family bought a PS2 for my brother and I. Yeah, dude, that was life-changing for sure. So
I got one recently, just like I'm going through that phase, you know, so I gotta play Dino Crisis 2 for no reason, but that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, so like right at the start, absolutely, that had a big part. Like when I was playing Batman Begins, like it was like the video game based on the movie.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying which to normally is not good.
Normally is not good, but that one's an absolute classic. I love that. Love that game. But yeah, like even that had like awesome sound effects, and I used to always like, you know, think about it like, whoa, that sounds so cool, like all the Foley or whatever they did, like not just like the music but all the sound basically in video games. But yeah, like more recently the Doom soundtrack has been a huge influence to me.
100%
amazing stuff. Yep, absolutely crazy, heavy, pulsing, punchy, like every heavy adjective you can use for that.
Dude, I would write right there with you. I have in my notes though that I interrupt people too much. Just keep glazing it for me, because it is exactly, I feel that. I feel that 100%. It's an absolutely amazing track. So 2016 one, right?
2016? I've been listening to a lot of the like the Doom Eternal soundtrack as well. It's all fantastic. Mick Gordon is an absolute riff machine. Everything that he puts out is insane. So, Doom, the soundtrack of that has been awesome.
Have you heard Killer Instinct? He did that one before Doom. I don't think it's as heavy, but it's like, oh, it's pretty close. You can tell he's got some things in there, especially like the, you've got to continue now. It's like, dun, 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 with this like ting in the background. It's very doomy. Yeah.
Industrial. Yeah. I love that. I love a little bit of a clang with the snare drum. It sounds so brutal. I have not heard of that one actually, but I get compared a lot to this soundtrack. Risk of Rain is the video game franchise.
Okay.
Risk of Rain 1, 2, 3. I think there are a few of them. But yeah, like pretty much.
And you've never played them. You've never really played those?
I've never played that game, and I'd never listened to the soundtrack until like maybe, I mean, honestly, I only seriously listened to it like a few weeks ago, but like I've been getting these comments for like at least a year or two, like, oh, this sounds kind of like Risk of Rain, and I've never heard of the game, never heard of the soundtrack until now, and it sounds really cool, and I can see like there's some lead synth work in that, like a bit of distorted lead synth, and I was like, okay, yeah, you know what, I do see that, I see a bit of a resemblance.
Did you ever look up the player or who that was, and you could be like, hey man, I'm your lost cousin, you know, I'd like to collaborate.
Absolutely, I would love to. I think his name is Chris, Christopher. I completely forgot his surname, but really, really cool, really cool soundtrack, and a lot of really interesting grooves and stuff as well, like electronic drums and all kinds of other synthesis. So that's been a pretty big influence as well, just like hearing these interesting synth sounds and throughout all like kind of sci-fi video games, you know, whether it's like Dead Space or like we said, Doom. But all of these games have like really cool sound effects, all originating from synths. So that's definitely been an influence.
Did you ever try covering one of them? I haven't looked at all the stuff. I don't know if you had something that you've kind of even put in one of your songs, kind of saying a nod to this, or if you just done a straight up cover, you got a bunch of covers and your hard drive and you're just like, well, that's just for me and my friends, but not really for releasing.
Yeah, I have. I have done, how many have I done? I think I've done just one Doom section, not the entire song. I rarely do like an entire song these days, but I did like a section of Meat Hook, which is like super brutal thing, and I laid over like a synth solo on top of that just because why not? It's like my style. But yeah, that was really fun. And besides that, I haven't really covered that much else, but I listen to it quite often, especially working out. It's amazing music for working out, all the Doom stuff. So yeah.
Nice. And so was there ever a game that you said, okay, that's the one, I need to sound like that? Was it probably Doom?
I haven't really looked at games in that way, to be honest. Like, I've definitely been like subconsciously influenced by them a lot. But I've never kind of strived to sound like one in particular, but I think it's like bled into it a lot. Like I definitely feel that way in some of the riffs that I write, and some of the sounds that I make are like very kind of distorted, like synth bass, but it's like you kind of remove quite a bit of those low frequencies. So it kind of sounds like a guitar, but it's a synth, and you know, similar to Doom. So yeah, I think it's definitely lent a lot to my playing and to my sound design, but I don't think I've ever like consciously tried to do that. It's mostly been like, you know, like wanting to sound like Jordan Rudess, for example. That was a big influence, who I wanted to, you know, I wanted to solo like him. I wanted to play the piano like him. But yeah, not as much with video games. I feel like that's always been like something that I've listened to a lot and then just been subconsciously influenced by.
When you're practicing, are you basically using the same tone that you're hearing on the recordings?
Yeah, I mean pretty much the same. I guess that's the good thing about keyboard and stuff, is that you can just have the tone that you're going to use like anywhere, you know, like you don't have to have a sick stack and like, yeah, exactly, looking at the head behind you. But yeah, like you don't need to have, you know, like the mics or anything that obviously help a lot with the tone and like the cabs and, you know, if it's drums, then, you know, you might have a completely different kit in the studio. Yeah. So yeah, that's the good thing about synths, is like I can literally practice with the exact same sound pretty much whenever and wherever, because a lot of my synth sounds are also like, you know, soft synths on my Mac. So I can literally just take my Mac into the forest and it will sound the same as my album. So it's a pretty good perk, to be honest.
You can just use the built-in stuff on your Mac?
He says, yeah, I mean, not the built-in stuff, but you can obviously download like tons of virtual instruments.
Oh, sure. Like, so yeah. With Reaper, what would you say? Like, okay, I'm going to use Reaper, like you said, and then what's the plugin that go to? Like, I obviously, you got your sponsors, you got your sounds that you've got to promote. But if you're a poor little boy that is just like, I just want to get that cool keyboard sound to get started. Would you say it's a square or a sawtooth or somewhere in between for your sound?
What is Yeah, I mean, look, like the main lead sound that I use, that I've done, like, I reckon I've probably done like at least 20 guest solos with this sound. And it's a saw sound. And I get asked this question all the time, by the way. So if you guys are listening, then this is the secret sauce to this
here it
sound,
is.
Right?
Yeah.
It's two sound waves, right? It's a saw wave and it's a triangle wave. They're slightly detuned so that it sounds a little bit more interesting and less like kind of boring,
like 3/6 cents, something like that, really just a
small
amount,
literally just tiniest bit. You don't want to go too much because then it'll sound a little bit too cheesy and it'll just lose a little bit of the
detail. Do you pan them or it's just the detune does it?
No panning. Just keep it mono, keep the lead front and center, just like a guitar. And yeah, so slightly detuned triangle and saw, it's just a little bit of variation there, and then a shit ton of distortion. So you want to go in and whatever you use, I've used pedals before, I've used like virtual like amp modelers, like Neural DSP's Archetype Gojira. I use that quite often, and just like their built-in distortion, turn off the actual amp part of it, right? You don't want the amp head, you don't want the cab, you want it just to be like distortion pedals, basically, whether it's a soft amp modeling thing or if it's like physical pedals. But and then it's just delay and reverb, and you can EQ it to your liking. I usually have a little bit of a mid scoop and then a lot of presence because I wanted to cut through a lot. And yeah, that's what I found works the best on like modern metal mixes. And that's it. That sounds pretty simple.
You could do that with Serum even, you know, that's, you just select probably the presets and that'll get you at 50% there.
Absolutely. Like if you don't have like, you know, multiple different devices, like you don't have a distortion pedal and stuff, and you don't have a Mac with like any computer with all these plugins and stuff, you just have a keyboard, you could probably do it all on the keyboard as well, because a lot of digital synths already have distortion, already have some kind of EQ, reverb, delay, like this Novation Summit that's next to me here. I've got distortion in it. I've got pretty much everything I need to make that the same sound. It's just my preference is to go for those plugins that I mentioned, like Archetype, Gojira and stuff. But you can get so far with just the built-in stuff. You do not need to go out and buy anything else.
I like using real pedals, man. I got to say that no matter, the more I use digital amps, the more it sounds like there's this sharpness and this fizzy and fakeness that I just can't get around. No matter how many plugins, you put a, it's supposed to simulate tape distortion and all this. And then, you know, I've tried 10 plugins to down to just one, no matter what, it's something weird about it. But if I use real distortion pedals, it seems to always sound better. Than anything else. But I admittedly have not tried the Gojira setting, so I think I need to get into that. Well, I want to get you this. Now that we're talking about gear, how many pedals do you have? How many keyboards do you have? And is it an addiction yet? Or, you know, don't worry, Mom, I'm fine. I just need one more.
I think it's definitely has been that before, especially with pedals. I feel like it's something weird about them, like something that draws people to it. It's kind of weird. But anyway, with keyboards, I've always kind of had a bit of self-restraint with them just because it is a pretty big deal. Like it's like a massive thing.
Yeah.
You know? Like whereas pedals, you can just put them in your pockets. Like, you know, you might as well not have it. But with a big ass keyboard, then like I've kept to like about maybe one every couple of years. You know, it's not like I go crazy with it. I make the most out of them. But yeah, at the moment I've got this Novation Summit, which is an absolute beast of a digital synth. And then I've got a Expressive V Osmos back home, which is like you'd be interested in this actually, because it's kind of like a guitar keyboard, because you can bend the keys side to side to bend.
Whoa.
Yep. So the Osmos is a pretty unique kind of newish thing that came out in the last few years. And
so you're not impressed with this thing? You're not really impressed,
dude,
with it?
That's a Novation, is it not?
The keys are not even weighted. This says, oh wait, yeah, you're right. It is. What am I
it
talking
is a
about?
Novation.
There we are.
Let's go. We're all Novation right. buddies.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Which dude. Is the best brand, of course.
Yeah. Absolutely. There's nothing better. No, but yeah, so the Expressive E Osmos, that's a pretty cool little thing. Bend keys on it, super expressive thing. And then I used to use a Core Kronos, which is kind of like the professional keyboardist go-to type thing. A lot of people use it for like multi-purpose things. You know, you want a piano, you want a choir, you want any kind of synth, you want anything. That's like the one keyboard to do it all. All these other keyboards I mentioned, they kind of have their like, you know, the thing that they do. For example, like the Summit is a digital synth. Like it's not something that you can just get a super realistic piano sound on. It's not like a sample based thing with strings and all that. You can make synth strings with it, but nothing real sounding. It's all synthesis, which works great for my style. But the Kronos is something I've got back home in Australia, and it does everything, literally. Like you can play drums on it, you know, like the classic, the thing that every high schooler does on the keyboard.
How about making like movie soundtracks? Like you'd say like if you had to redo Lord of the Rings, like you could do it on that keyboard.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. Wow. So yeah, you can you got all the brass and everything like that. It's basically like, you know, having all your virtual like string libraries and stuff on your laptop. It's just that, but on a keyboard. So that one's a beast, but it is so heavy that I can't take it anywhere. So like, I don't have it here in Sweden with me. It's like, I think it's like 30 kilos. So
jeez, okay, wow, that is yeah.
Yeah, so it's a bit heavy, a little bit cumbersome. So it just stays in the studio, and it's fantastic for that. One of the other keyboards that I think is slept on a little bit that I have is the Artria Mini Freak. It's this little pocket rocket, 37 keys, super powerful. And if you don't have $1,000 to spare to actually buy the thing, they have a virtual instrument, the same thing, but in virtual form. So you can download it. Obviously, you have to buy it, but it's only like a couple hundred dollars compared to like $1,000 for the synth. And yeah, you just have the exact same features on your laptop. So that's been great because like I have it back in Australia and I used it a lot. It's particularly really good for like we were mentioning, like for Doom-like sounds, because it's got insanely good distortion built into it. And
the presets are pretty easy. Is it like just go, you select some, everything's golden?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just a really easy to use synth and super portable as well. But so I've been using the virtual version of that on my laptop all the time while I'm here in Sweden, because like I've got the synth like right here, basically. Like, you know, I can just hook up a keyboard to it like with MIDI and then just play it like it's the synth back home. So it's pretty handy having this kind of tech. You know, you can basically have the keyboard that you normally have just everywhere you go on your laptop. So that's pretty cool. But yeah, I've got a few different synths, and then I've got a few different pedals, but mostly I just use the H90. I don't know if you know this multi-effects Eventide pedal. But yeah, it just
that's digital though, right? That's a fully digital setup. Yeah.
You wouldn't like it. It's no analog distortion on that.
Yeah.
Man.
No, I use a lot of digital stuff. It just depends on what it's going for and that sort of thing. But I got to say, I have a soft spot in my heart for pedals. In fact, my favorite right now is using two pedals, you know, and just the combination of those two. And it's bright. It sounds like garbage. But when you put it into the recording and I listen back to it with get some noise off of it, everything, I'm just like, oh, finally. That's what I wanted.
It can be super fun just to like stack stuff and get really gnarly with it. I don't know if you know about this one. The distortion pedal, the only analog pedal that I have, is a plasma pedal.
Plasma.
It's by Game Changer Audio.
Okay.
Which is like a Latvian company that make some really cool, interesting stuff, and it's got a little Tesla coil inside it. So when you put audio signal in, it like lights up like it's got electricity going through it, and then it basically converts the audio into I think it's just an electrical signal, electrical
That's
current
so
or something,
awesome.
And then it outputs it, and it's just like a really insane fuzz. Basically, it's not super controlled, but it's just like a wild, crazy distortion. But yeah, that's the only analog pedal that I use, and it's super useful, especially on synths, because it's got a little blend knob on it.
Oh, nice.
It's kind of, you know, something that a lot of bassists and synth guys love for their instruments, just so that they can have a little bit more of that original signal going through as well. But yeah, that one's sick. So yeah, if you ever get the chance to try one, I think you'll like
having it. Is it made for keyboard players, or is it just like, it's just, hey, here's a distortion pedal, go have fun with the kids?
Yeah, anything, put it on anything. Like, you can use it on guitar, you can use it on, I think Ola England made a pretty sick video on it, just showing how filthy it is. It's like, it sounds like a chainsaw, basically.
Have you heard of this guy, Hey Mom, No Computer? Look, No Computer, something like this. Do you know who I'm talking about? It's this crazy guy.
I don't remember it. Tell me.
Yeah, he has these walls of analog things that he finds. Like, he's like, hey, this, I found this in the bottom of a stadium under a football league, and now I'm going to use it to make the theme from Kirby in 64. I don't know. He just comes up with these crazy ideas. Mad scientist guy. And I watch his content. I'm subscribed, and I have no idea what's coming next. And he takes this giant gear live. You know, it's like one of those you're plugging in the different stuff, and he'll play a little melody, and then it'll loop and this sort of thing, you know? So insane stuff with that. Before we close out here, I wanted to ask you just one more thing, particularly about Instagram, because the last few guests I've had on have said, like, boy, the algorithm is crazy right now. It's getting worse. You know, is there something evergreen that you can give hope to people that are like, okay, listen, I got the look. I got this keyboard sound. I'm playing my heart out. What is the big thing you want to avoid? You know, like, don't burn out and do a post. Because I noticed your posts are pretty short, you know, especially since you think, like, oh, I got to show them as much as I can. You give a taste, you get in and you get out, you know, with a lot of the posts, you know, for your music that's coming out on the 29th, like we said. So it's like you're planning pretty far ahead. And most musicians that I've spoken to is like, oh, we do one song and the next month another song and we're kind of drip feeding it. But you're saying like, hey, I'm just putting little things here and there and it's all coming out all at once, right? On the 29th?
Kind of. So yeah, I've dropped two tracks so far, two singles. That's kind of been the lead up to the album. I've released a lot of short form content as well as like the full music videos for those two. But yeah, absolutely. Even when this album comes out, I guess my strategy with it is to drop kind of like music videos as almost treat them as singles. So I'm going to be, you know, releasing the full album on the 29th of November. And then following that, release a music video for one of the tracks, promote that, you know, put some money behind it, campaign, ad campaign and stuff for a few weeks, and then release another music video for one of the other tracks on the album. And this way people just keep, you know, listening to the album. And then every time a new music video comes out, it kind of gets refreshed to the previous listeners, as well as, you know, then introduce that new music video and, hey, the album's out, go check it out, you know, kind of like also attract a lot of new listeners. So yeah, basically my planning so far has gone up to March next year, like releasing music video basically almost every month. And I think I will end up having a music video for every single track on the album.
Nice.
So there are 8 tracks and so far I've got two out. But yeah, that's kind of how I'm treating this one. Kind of like, you know, dropping singles, but at one point I'll have the whole album so that I'm not just, you know, milking it to death.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Do you feel like there's some pressure with the algorithm lately where it's just like, okay, things are changing and we don't know how?
Absolutely. Yeah. Like I've definitely seen like a dip in a lot of people's like numbers. Cause you know, that's something that you kind of keep an eye out if you're, you know, in the same space, is like, you want to be wary of like, you know, what's working and what's not compared to, you know, other peers and, other people in the same space as you. So I've noticed that for myself as well, definitely like, a little bit of a drop in like the, just amount of reach that most of the videos get. But I think it does have the potential to get the same reach as you used to. Now that they've come out with like the reposting and stuff, I've just been like kind of reposting my video like after like a few days, just so that it reaches any people that it missed previously. And I feel like that's helped a little bit. For example, I might put out a video, it gets, you know, however many, a few hundred likes. And then I might repost and I might get another 100 likes, you know, like from people right. that hadn't seen it before. So yeah, I think reposting it helps, also like maybe at a slightly different time, than when you posted it, just to reach some different people. And, even trying out like the trial.
Yeah. I've heard a lot about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I've done that a couple of times with this new album, like the new singles that are launching, just like trialing my reels to like people that don't follow me already. And I think that that's helped a lot as well, like in just, you know, gaining some more followers as well as, you know, just seeing how well this reel is doing. So I've like, you know, chosen not to post certain content just because I was like, it's not doing as well as I hoped. So maybe just monitoring that, like trying that out. I think you can do quite a few like releases or like posts with that option. So like
the trial, you mean,
trial. Yeah, so yeah. It doesn't hurt to like, you know, take it to your advantage. And
that's cool. You're kind of looking at it as like, listen, I'm trying to not only have wins but avoid the losses.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a huge part. Like yeah, like now that I'm getting into a lot of the marketing side of things as well, like with this album, I've noticed that a lot of the time you like a video that you expected to do well as an ad does not work at all. So like turning them off, you know, making sure you trial it, it's not working, get rid of it, tailor something else, optimize it, something else that is kind of doing okay to make it great. And I think it's like the same for posting as well. If you do a trial, it doesn't work out that great. Maybe it's not the video that people resonate with necessarily. But yeah, I think that has helped a little bit as well as like the repost. And yeah, I think that's mainly it, but I haven't really looked into it too much besides that.
The small inside group that I have has been suggesting like carousels do a little bit more with reach, but it's not something that people have said like, oh, switch to that. You know, people are just like, okay, it's a little bit better, but maybe that's the future.
Yeah, I mean, carousels are really good because like every time you post a carousel, it comes up in people's feed. And then if someone scrolls past it, that's not it. Like it will come back on the second photo or the second video on the carousel, which is super handy. So that way, you know, like you basically have that same effect of like it basically being reposted. It's back in everyone's feed again. Even if you scroll past it or whatever. And if it's like the second photo or the second video is more appealing, then it might actually get more reach and it might get more engagement and stuff as well. So I reckon that's also something worth trying out. If you are struggling, then trying out the trial feature, trying out carousels, see if that works well. And also, of course, reposting stuff just so it reaches the followers that it missed the first time.
Ron, you are not a gatekeeper. People are going to be thankful. I'm going to be sending this to people constantly. Anyone has questions for that, I really appreciate it. Last thing I want to ask you before we close it up, I think we've been going almost an hour here and it feels like 5 minutes. I really appreciate your energy and time. What is the hardest solo on this album, whether it's out or not yet, or what you've got on the, you know, you're shooting it, but what is the solo you're just like, dude, that's, I don't know what I'm thinking with that one. That's, it's so hard, you know. Which one is it? If you had to, maybe two, if you had to whittle it down to something insanely hard to play.
All right. Okay, first of all, I would say solo-wise, on my new single, Wind Eye, that's out featuring Eye of the Sky, pretty much all the lead solos in that are pretty difficult in my opinion. But I think the hardest part of the album in general is a riff on the third last track on the album, The Emergence, and it is insane.
Yeah.
All right. So it's probably brutal. You'll hear it, a lot of really fast single note hitting. I don't know what you would call it.
Yeah.
There's no word for chugging on the keyboard.
Yeah.
Pressing the key. Doesn't sound as brutal. But yeah, so The Emergence probably has the hardest part of the entire album. So I'm pretty stoked about that.
29th, that's where it's at, baby. Rowan, hey, so this is the part of the podcast where I like to hand it off to my guests, give them a chance to tell us a little bit about what they're promoting. And you obviously, you know, have something to promote. We've been talking about this whole time, your keyboard playing. What's coming out? I think you said the 29th?
Yep, so 29th of November is the second album that I've worked on as a solo artist. It's coming out. Pretty stoked about this one.
Nice.
I dropped a couple of singles recently, so the full thing comes out 29th of November. It's like 8 tracks and definitely the best stuff I've done so far, so pretty stoked.
Nice. Okay, well, go check it out. It's on Spotify, Apple, everything.
Absolutely, yep. Bandcamp, everything. Any streaming platform you can think of.
Sick. 29th, we'll check it out. Well, I think that's all the time we have. Rowan, did you enjoy your time on the podcast?
This was life-changing, man. Like, this is the best podcast on the planet.
Man,
the best.
Man, I mean, hey, I didn't say it. He said it. But hey, you might be the next guest, depending on who I message next, or it could be a month from now, depending on how fast my editor, who looks a lot like me, is working on these. Until then, it's been a good time. For everyone at home, thank you for listening. And for now, bye!
Bye!
Yeah.
Oh, that was sharp.